You're listening to the Travel Writers Show on J-Air 87.8 FM. Well, one of the most listened to tracks on our SoundCloud site for many, many months was an interview that Kirsty Bedford did with nutritionist Cindy O'Mara. Cindy talks to Kirsty again today about a couple of currently hot topics: sugar in our food chain and whether we want it or even know that it's there, and questions of truth in food labelling. This is a really compelling interview, and I'm sure it will attract listeners and perhaps comments on the SoundCloud site tomorrow. So that's soundcloud.com/travelwritersradio.
New Australian research shows a 20% tax on soft drinks could save more than 1,600 lives and raise at least $400 million a year for health initiatives. The study by the Obesity Policy Coalition and the University of Queensland comes just weeks after the British government announced it would introduce a sugar levy on soft drinks from 2018. We're joined today by leading nutritionist and author Cindy O'Mara to talk about the sugar tax and whether or not she feels it will answer the obesity and diabetes tsunami sweeping Australia. Good afternoon, Cindy.
Good afternoon, Kirsty.
Should we just start with talking about the tax on soft drinks? So what sort of price, do you know, are we talking about that's going to bring them to? What kind of price is that going to bring?
Well, just 20% up, that's what they're saying. So I know that it will bring it into alignment with water. So here we have soft drinks that obviously take more ingredients and they're cheaper than water. So when you're at the fridge and you're faced with, oh, well, I can have a soft drink or I can have water, you go, well, the soft drink's cheaper. Why don't I? And especially if you're on a budget, you go, oh, well, I need that because I'm thirsty. So at least it'll bring it in alignment with water. That will be one thing that it will do. And I've been listening to people, you know, saying, you know, will it make any difference to them? And I'm not seeing many people say that it's going to make a difference to them. I just say, well, I like drinking it and I'll just continue to drink it. So, you know, if it's a dollar drink, it's $1.20 now. So that doesn't really push into the budgets of people too much. If it's a $2 drink, it's $2.40. So, yeah. I don't know if it's going to sway the people that do drink it, but at least that tax will then go towards prevention, hopefully, rather than, you know, cure for diabetes. Let's look for prevention for it.
So the thing about soft drinks, though, isn't it more than that? I mean, I wonder why target soft drinks.
Oh, definitely. Like, you just have to watch that sugar film, which is by Damon Gammoux. And, you know, he actually did the whole experiment where he didn't even drink soft drinks. All he did was he ate foods that were perceived as healthy, such as muesli bars, breakfast cereals, I can't even think what else, yogurts, breads, things like that. So he ate foods that were perceived to be healthy but had a lot higher sugar than what he was eating on a real food diet. And, you know, he put on weight, number one. But I think people aren't getting this, is that it's not about the weight. It's actually about what it's doing to the insides of our body and to insulin resistance and how we deal with sugar, which is the most important thing. So I put the blog up on my Facebook page yesterday, and it's called That Sugar Tax. And then I noticed people were saying, well, I eat this way. I eat sugar and do things like that, and I don't gain any weight. But they're not looking at what it's doing to their insides and what it's doing to the overall health of that human being. And sugar in soft drinks is just part of the whole equation. It seems to be in every package food, especially since we went into the low-fat revolution, which was back in the 60s and 70s and more so in the 80s, that we started to put sugar in as opposed to fat in. And when we've completely... and I don't want to put we in there because I've never agreed with this, but the government have completely changed the health of the Australian people as a result of the low-fat revolution.
But so why has sugar been allowed to be added, you know, to so many foods these days?
Because sugar was never seen as something that was bad for us, and it was a way of replacing fat. And so it was added to everything. And what's interesting is, you know, when we look back in the 1960s and 70s, when this whole thing on fat started, there were two opposing camps. There was the fat camp and the sugar camp. So Yudkin, who was the researcher, and saying it's sugar that's causing this increase in heart disease, not fat. And then there was this other gentleman by the name of Ansel Keys that was saying, no, it's fat, not sugar. And Yudkin lost out, basically, in this whole debate. And what won was Ansel Keys, a very persuasive character. And so because of him, and because of then it being adopted by the food standards and by the nutritional guidelines and by the American public started at first, or the American government started at first, we went to this low-fat revolution.
And I think it does become quite confusing for people because, like I think you've suggested too, there was the outcry about salt, and whether it's fat or salt or sugar, the problem is I think it becomes confusing for people in regards to, you know, what they should consider when they're managing their diets.
Yeah, look, I think when you vilify one food as the culprit and the thing that's causing everything in the light in your life, then I think you're on the wrong track. So we vilified salt first, and we said, oh, salt causes hypertension, take salt out of everything, and so everything was low salt. And then it was fat causes everything, and so fat was taken out, and now it's sugar. But sugar is part of the complex of carbohydrates. And while, you know, it's been shown that we need fat and protein in order to survive and not we don't need sugar, but if you just stayed on fat and protein and you never ate sugar, then eventually infertility amongst women would happen, because we know that there was an ebb and flow in our life. And then summer we would eat lots of sweet fruits and sugar and lots of saturated fat, which had piled up on animals that ate lots of sweet grasses. So in the summer, we would eat these sweet fruits and these saturated fats, which would then, in turn, reduce insulin sensitivity, make us leave the sugar in the blood, increase what we call triglycerides, which would then lay down as fat for us, which was very important in the summer to do, so we would survive a very lean winter where there wasn't a lot of sugar, there wasn't a lot of fat. It was lean meats and greens, basically, if there was any greens. And so we would go into this beautiful ebb and flow of gaining weight in order to survive the winter. But guess what? There's no winter in Australia anymore. It just doesn't exist. There's no winter in the Western world. We have grocery stores that are filled with anything that we want. And by not realizing this, that sugar was a very important part of our diet and a very important part of fertility and important part of laying down of fat. And then when we make that the culprit and that the problem, then we're going to find people that will sway to, oh, I'm allowed fat and I'm allowed protein, but I'm not allowed carbohydrates, and then they go completely the extreme. And I think it's about time we stop blaming one thing and we start looking at our lifestyle and we start looking at everything that we're consuming and realize that if we eat real foods as opposed to shelf stable packaged foods that last forever, then we're going to be far better off no matter, you know, what we consume.
So as a short-term solution, do you think that the tax on soft drinks will actually help the obesity epidemic?
Well, there's no proof that it will, but the Queensland University, you know, they did this study and they said, you know, that it will help, you know, and that is not a double-blind study. This is a study that they've graphed and they've said, okay, if we do this and then we predict this, then our prediction says that if that we do that in 20 years, we'll be here. But that's a prediction. And it's all well and good to do predictions, and I don't have problems with predictions, so it helps us move forward on what we're going to do. But in the end, I think it's not just about a tax on sugar. I think it's about education, and I also think it's about the government stepping in and stopping us being able to have these shelf-stable packaged foods in such enormous amounts, as opposed to, hey, look, it's okay to have them occasionally, but let's look at us looking at a preventative way. And so, when you go into a hospital and you see takeaway foods and you see junk foods, we're really not telling the public that these foods are bad for us. We're actually going, well, they served it up in hospital, I should be okay.
So would labelling address a lot of that problem if the government was introduced? And I know it's obviously already been discussed about around origin of food, government ensuring that people are aware after the hepatitis A scare with frozen berries. But is that something that maybe from a sugar perspective that we should look at addressing so people are more educated about the sugar levels in foods?
Well, that would be just the same as when we looked at the nutritional labelling and said, well, now we're looking at salt and then somebody else is looking at fat and now we're going to start looking at sugar. But it, when you're looking at the nutritional labels and making it quite clear that it's low in sugar, then you're really not looking at the ingredients that are in it, and you forget the nutritional labelling and go straight to the ingredients and see what the food's made out of. What if the food is made up of things that are made from sugar? A lot of people don't realise this, that maltodextrin and dextrose, and I see people who are quitting sugar go to these types of sugars, but they're actually made... they're made from wheat and they're made into a sugar, into a very refined sugar. So, and then it might be an artificial sweetener that makes it sweet. I believe everybody needs to look at the ingredients. Have a look what this food is made out of, as opposed to looking at just the nutritional label, because we can manipulate any food to be perfect in salt, perfect in fat and perfect in sugar. But when you read the ingredients and you realise that the ingredients are basically filled with numbers and colours and flavours and fillers and starches and nothing's real in it. So while we've looked at salt, fat and sugar, we also need to start looking at ingredients and realising where these ingredients are coming from. And I think genetically modified foods need to be targeted as well. It needs to be on the label, because as an individual, I choose not to eat that. And I want to know that... that it's either in my food or not in my food. And I think that that also has to be something that we need to look at.
Great. Thank you so much for your time, Cindy. I really appreciate that.
You're welcome, Kirsty.